This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Save me from myself this morning. Gosh, I'm getting into trouble here. Either way, how are you?
Bokotov, Howard. Yeah, you're lucky you didn't say what you said in Israel, because Israel is super vegan friendly. And lots and lots of people here following a vegan lifestyle. Not me, I should hasten to add, but other people I know,
right.
And even people who enjoy life, you'd be surprised to hear that. But one of the things that amuses me about this time of year is that we start to get the lists of the top 10 things for the year. Have you noticed that? We have to know The latest top 10 list that I was reading, two top 10 lists actually, of the same thing from different countries, is passwords that people use. Now, I'm guessing people are going to start putting up their hands and saying, that's me, when you hear what I'm going to say about passwords. I was reading in Sky News yesterday the top 20 UK-based passwords people living in the UK and which passwords they use. And the number one password for 2022 in the UK was password.
Oh, rubbish. Really?
Password. Is that you, anybody? I'm sure that there are people out there who are going, that's me. And the second most popular password was 123456.
Gosh.
Followed by guest, Liverpool, and QWERTY. Those were the top five passwords.
Liverpool and QWERTY.
Yes.
QWERTY, yes. That's interesting. That says something.
And herein comes the whole cultural thing, because obviously Liverpool sneaking into the UK top 10 list.
Makes sense.
I looked at the Israeli top 10 list, I didn't find Liverpool there, although it might well have been there. Mm-hmm. But this is the most fascinating thing. Last year in Israel, the top password was 123456. But this year, not. And this year's top password used is SHA256.
What?
SHA256. Now, I admit, Howard, that I had to go and look this one up.
Yeah, because what does that even mean?
I was a little confused. SHA256 is Secure Hash Algorithm 256-bit, SHA256. And it's apparently a cryptographic security algorithm that encrypts data into a secure format that is unreadable. And SHA256 was the most popular password in 2022 in Israel.
Which shows the level of sophistication of Israeli society, doesn't it?
Well, this is what I'm thinking, right? If people are sufficiently familiar with SHA256, surely they would come up with a better password.
One would think, right?
One would think. And then the remainder of the top 10 passwords in Israel were all number combinations. 1234563, 1234554, 1231235, 1234567891. Six, just to confuse you. Those were kind of the top passwords used in Israel. And it's interesting that the top 10 lists have really gone a step further where passwords are concerned this year, because they're also looking at how pop culture trends influence passwords. And I'm not talking about a secure hash algorithm in terms of pop culture, but things like the car names that people use. Mini apparently was the top one, followed by Kia and Ford. Apparently football teams and all kinds of other things that are current in pop culture, names of brands, Tiffany, Aldo, Gap, they are apparently fashion brands that are also used as passwords. what do you guys use for your passwords?
Could you tell us your whole password? No, don't. As Charles says, I thought the password, the whole idea was that nobody knew them. But, I guess these must have been done in surveys where people were assured of the safety. But very, very interesting that Israel, the passwords that they use there, much more sophisticated. And I really do think it reflects something about the level in the society. Terrible, terrible story yesterday. 3 Israelis were killed, 3 injured in a terror attack. What happened?
So, first of all, it's being described as a lone wolf attack. One individual who, acting on his own, went about a whole rampage of an attack near to the city of Ariel, which some people would say is in the West Bank, across the Green Line, not in Israel proper, whatever. The city of Ariel is certainly on the other side of what one might term the Green Line, which was drawn up in order to set things up during the 1948, when Israel was declared independent and we had to try and set some borders. This was determined, and Ariel is one of those cities that's on the east side of the Green Line. This individual came from a nearby Arab village and apparently had a work permit to work as a cleaner in the Ariel industrial zone. So this is someone who came and went to Ariel to work there and was officially authorized to do so. 18 years old, turned up at about 9:30 yesterday morning at the entrance to the gate where the Ariel industrial zone is located, and apparently had a knife in his hand. He then stabbed one of the 2 civilian security guards who were standing at the gate. He moderately wounded that individual. The second security guard is reported to have fired shots in the air. And then the terrorist ran approximately 100 meters down the road towards a petrol station, where he then stabbed 5 people, 2 of whom were killed right away at that petrol station. While he was at the petrol station, he managed to jump into a car that was located there, and then he drove onto one of Israel's main highways, Route number 5, where he crashed into another car and seriously wounded the individual whose car he crashed into. The car that he was traveling in was completely wrecked, and he was miraculously able then to still keep going. Someone else who saw the accident stopped to see what he could do to help, and the terrorist then jumped into that car and drove off in the second car, stealing a second car in the process. Mm-hmm. He then traveled a little down the road towards the Shomron crossing checkpoint, where he understood that there was a checkpoint, and turned around against the traffic. And at that point, there were some individuals in that area who understood what was going on, and they shot the terrorist, and he was killed at that moment. So that was the kind of series of events that took place yesterday morning. And it almost goes back a little to the conversation that we had yesterday about damned if you do and damned if you don't, in terms of taking action against these individuals. Because, of course, now that second security guard who was at the gate where the original attack took place is under scrutiny. Why wasn't he more active? Why didn't he shoot towards the terrorist? Why shoot in the air? Because if he would have taken the person down at that point, he would have avoided what then followed, which was 2 individuals who were stabbed and killed at the petrol station, and that individual who was seriously injured in the motor car accident and unfortunately afterwards died of his wounds. Those were the 3 individuals who were killed in this rampage. And so, of course, questions are now being asked about why people didn't do more, as opposed to the previous incident where someone was accused of doing too much. So it's a very, very tough situation to be in. And of course, our hearts and thoughts and prayers go to the 3 families who have lost fathers, grandfathers. Tamir Avichai, 50 Absolutely years old, terrible. From Kiryat Netafim, left behind 6 children, aged between 12 and 29. Michael Ledigin, 36 years old, from Bat Yam, recent immigrant from the former Soviet Union, left behind 2 young children, Moti Ashkenazi, 59 years old from Yavne, a grandfather left behind, families who are absolutely devastated because these three individuals they had no reason not to return home yesterday. They all set out to go about their daily business as one would do and never came home because of the actions of one so-called lone wolf terrorist. But we now discover that he comes from a family of people who've been very, very active, very, very anti-Israel, taken action. His father, his brother have both been under security scrutiny, have both been on the radar. And so once again, questions are being asked about how it is that we need to respond. Here's an individual who was authorized to work there, so there would be no reason why he wouldn't come along there and potentially go about his work. And when we put a hand out to try and encourage people to be part of our society, to come and work and to earn a living and to have access to things that we are building up and to partner us in this effort to improve our lives and to build something positive, then we effectively get stabbed, this time not in the back, but unfortunately from the front even. And this is a very, very sad, heartbreaking set of events that took place. There were other people injured as well in the petrol station, people who were stabbed there, who are in hospital and recovering. Some of them were quite seriously injured. And of course, our prayers are with them for their speedy recovery. Lots and lots of questions being asked right now about what happened, how it could have happened, and what we ought to be doing in the future in order to try and avoid such a situation arising without going too far, without taking the law into our own hands, without being accused of doing too much.
And that's the problem, is because what happens is, God forbid, the next event, and Israel is perceived, or some of the soldiers are perceived to be, in inverted commas, overreacting within the context of that particular event. But what we don't see is the context, and we don't see the impact that this attack has on the reaction of the next one. And that makes it very, very difficult for anybody in that situation. Really, really problematic.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, because I think that every incident is fresh in the mind when the next thing happens. Mm. What happened last time is very, very influential to people's actions of what happens the next time. And you know, that's a point that is very much openly discussed when soldiers set out, when they go carrying their weapons, when they're traveling on public transport, we're in the public area, when they're on duty at checkpoints involving civilians crossing backwards and forwards. Every civilian who comes forward is potentially suspicious. Most of them are just trying to go about their daily business, trying to earn a living, trying to look after their families, but they have to cross these checkpoints and the soldiers have to be vigilant. And every person who approaches could potentially be the next person from yesterday's attack. Of course, that does create a certain tension, and it creates nervousness amongst our soldiers as to how they should be responding to particular situations and particular people. It's not a simple situation to be in.
Absolutely not. Coalition and negotiations continued yesterday.
So, as mentioned in our discussion yesterday morning, the Knesset, the 25th Knesset, was sworn in, and apparently Prime Minister-elect Benjamin Netanyahu had hoped to swear in his coalition yesterday as well. To be honest with you, I don't think he's even close to having his coalition ready yet, even though these positive statements about, you know, we're getting ready for business, we're almost ready to start, whatever. I think that there's still quite a lot of work to be done. We don't have any indication as to the people who are going to take on the most senior roles. Lots and lots of rumors backwards and forwards about, for example, whether Bezalel Smotrich is going to be the Minister of Defense. Apparently, that's the role, that's the job that he's looking to take on. He does have some influence because, of course, he brings an important number of people to the coalition. Whether Arya Dery is going to be the Minister of Finance, because those are the rumors right now. We all have many of us have our doubts about whether he's really properly qualified to hold that position and to take the role. It seems as if, though, it's more likely that one of the senior Likud members will be the Minister of Defense, which means where does that leave Smotrich? He's obviously going to want to have a senior job. So at the moment, we really don't know who's going to be taking on which role. And it's quite interesting that certainly in the Haredi newspapers, they've already started to dive in attacking, for example, Smotrich for demanding certain jobs and accusing him of representing a specific sector, security and economic views are not in line with the general, with the needs of the general public of the state of Israel. Mm. That's according to one of the Haredi daily newspapers. And it's interesting that that's the way they look at things. So at the moment, we really don't have any proper view of who's going to be doing which job. What we do know is that yesterday, during the period of the swearing of the Knesset, swearing in of the Knesset, there was also setting up of various Knesset committees, which are already beginning to operate. Many proposals for new bills were put forward. It's interesting to see who put forward which proposals. There was a certain proposal put forward to add the value of equality to our basic law. There was a bill put forward to deal with the cost of living, religion and state and the rule of law, including raising the minimum wage, including allowing public transportation on Shabbat, including giving fathers full paternity leave, legalizing civil marriage. These were some of the bills that have already been put forward to the next Knesset.
And we don't have a lot of time, but I just wanted to quickly hear about the Georgian authorities managing to thwart an Iranian plan to assassinate an Israeli in Georgia.
So, again, I mean, it seems as if, though, Iran is very much intent on extracting revenge for not one, not two, but a whole host of things which they have accused Israel of carrying out on their territory and theoretically embarrassing them, not only in front of the people, but indeed in front of the world. And this seems to have been one of those plans by the Iranian National Guard, who apparently had recruited a Pakistani team of assassins to go to Georgia, apparently affiliated with Al-Qaeda. They'd gathered information on this Israeli businessman in Georgia who lives and works in Georgia, someone by the name of Yitzhak Moshe. He's an Israeli businessman, lives and works. Then apparently Iran had sent this Pakistani team to gather very, very high-level intelligence and information about him. In the end, last week, the Georgian authorities were suspicious of some individuals. They arrested them and found this whole plan, arms smuggled in from Turkey, Pakistani assailants with Georgian nationality as well, all leads back to Iran. So it's very, very fascinating to see how this world of international espionage is going down.
Indeed. 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Philbin. That was Anthony Wright with your Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.